Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
Back to the long-term effects of COVID. Anne Norton is in County Clare. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Will you describe to me the taste element? I haven't heard this described. You got COVID and you say you have, is it an awful taste in your mouth?
It's disgusting. No matter how many times I brush my teeth or how, you know, different mouthwashes, the taste and the sensation in my mouth just does not go away. So I think no matter what you eat, it either tastes the same or there's no taste at all.
Well, stay there for a minute. Is there a taste in your mouth now?
Oh, yeah.
And so it's there all the time?
All the time.
It's not just when you introduce a toothbrush or a toothpaste?
Oh, God, no. It's there all the time. Like, the reason why I'm constantly brushing my mouth and using mouthwash to try and actually see would it actually go. And I'd be putting Bongella in, you know, thinking that it might actually take the sensation away. But no, it's very different, and it's something that I wouldn't have experienced before.
As bluntly as you can, Anne, because this is education for people, can you describe the taste?
Can I describe the taste? It's just metal.
Okay.
It's a metally taste that it's causing your mouth to be dry, that it feels that it needs there isn't as much water circulating around the gums and things like that. So it's so unusual.
But is it an odious taste? Is it an awful taste?
Like, oh, it's rotten.
Okay.
But for me, it is because.
Well,
is it like
having rotten food in your mouth?
It's like eating metal.
So, what do you want to do? Do you want to spit? Do you want to drink something to try and kill it, to counteract the taste?
Well, I'd be trying to make sure that my mouth is hydrated, because it seems to take the fluid out. It dries it up, so that I'm drinking quite a lot. But no matter what I eat, it's the same taste. So you can't, like, even, you know, you can't have the pleasure of having your favourite food anymore because you're not getting the same effects from it.
And can I ask you, just bear with me for a second, because I want to go back to when you got COVID and the long-term effects, but just on the taste element, because taste is one of the big, when you look at the difference between coronavirus, the checklist are given out, taste is one of the big differentials that says you strongly suspect that you have COVID-19. Is it a taste that you want to throw up?
Not now.
Okay.
But back in April, when I actually got the diagnosis, it was one of my problems that I didn't have a temperature, but I actually felt that I had an upset stomach. That was kind of one of my main issues.
So what do you taste when you're sipping a cup of tea?
You're literally just tasting that kind of
metally
taste in your mouth all the time.
Okay. Would you be conscious of other people smelling your breath?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All the time now. Again, you know, like, I went out this morning to meet a builder and a couple of other people, and again, I'm chewing spearmint chewing gum. I've the toothpaste in the handbag with me now, and
we'll find out from other people, because our hair loss has been coming up in women especially, has been coming up on Liveline for the last week, so to speak. But Anne, when you wear a mask, is there an odious fragrance, that's the wrong word, odious smell from the mask?
Well, I change my mask quite a lot.
Okay, well done.
Because I would be very conscious of the fact that I'm out in the public And I have three children, and one of them has underlying conditions, so I would be very conscious.
Okay.
The fact that I don't want to bring it back into the house.
Okay, when did you contract COVID-19?
I got the test on the end of March, okay. And I got the diagnosis on the bank holiday Monday over Easter.
And your reaction when you got the diagnosis?
I think I was a bit shocked because I was sleeping a lot, mm-hmm. and I found it very difficult to motivate myself to get up and to do things. I would say my husband thought that I actually was a small bit depressed, mm-hmm. Because I couldn't get up for dinner and things like that. So I think when I actually got the diagnosis, it was shock, but I'd say relief too, that we knew then why I was feeling the way I was feeling. But then there was absolute panic because of Nicole, my daughter. Mm-hmm. And then we literally had to put everything into motion, that I had to stay isolated from the rest of the family. And my GP contacted me on a daily basis to make sure that I was okay. He was conscious of the fact that he wanted to make sure that if I needed to be hospitalised, that I was... So every morning he phoned me to know, was I okay? And eventually he got an ambulance to come to the house and pick me up and bring me into the hospital, because my lungs were starting to tighten up. But thankfully, the respiratory side of it, you know, settled, and I didn't have to go on any respirators or anything like that. But I spent maybe about 6 weeks in bed, very, very sick and very, very thrown down. But here I am now in September.
Well, how are you now? The taste sounds awful. That issue sounds awful.
Yeah, absolutely. The taste, the tiredness, very difficult.
Well, tell me about the tiredness. 24 hours in a day. How intense is the fatigue?
There is, like, say, Saturday and Sunday, I spent the majority of it in bed. We're in a kind of situation here that I have to get Nicole up and I have to put Nicole to bed. So, like, I go to bed around 6 o'clock in the evening, and then at 10 or half 10, the shouts come from upstairs or downstairs to come down and put her to bed, and I do that. But a lot of, like, up until I'd say 2 weeks ago, I could have spent every day in bed.
This is nearly 5 months later. You're still chronically fatigued, and that taste.
And I would contact our GP now I would have been checking in every week, you know, just to make sure that, you know, that it was okay to be feeling the way I was. And, like, I think everybody is just so unaware of how this is affecting people and the difficulties people are having with it. Like, even the shortness of breath, I would have been very active. I ran marathons, I climbed mountains over the years. And I love to go into our local town in Ennis, and I love to walk around, I love to shop. And I find that if I went from one end of O'Connell Street to the other, I'm totally winded, that I'm actually standing there taking breath. Which wouldn't have been me. And, like, it's just so different to the norm. And then I'd be a very active, very busy person. So you're kind of lying to people, because, you know, people would be contacting me and I'd be in bed, and they'd say, "Oh, Annie, you're lying down." I'd be like, no. But I would be, because I'm just exhausted. But I try to keep going, but then you realise that you can't.
Do you feel, Anne, from what you're saying, do you feel it's put years on you?
Oh, I'm exhausted. I keep saying I'm only a young one, but I feel a hell of a lot older than what I am at the minute. It is. It's very different. You know, and it definitely has taken a huge impact on our own, you know, on our family life, because like, we love to be out and about, and we love to be going away at weekends and things like that. But, like, even the idea of going now for a trek or a walk or over the cliffs of Moher, things like that, I just don't have the energy. So I let them all go without me. And I'm happy to crawl into bed. But it's an awful way to be. But I would be hoping, you know, and I've asked about, you know, tonics and is there anything that I could be taking? And, like, you know, our GP has said, you know, good diet. And, like, that's really all you can do. Like, I've asked, we had a, I was at a talk there recently with the HSC, and I asked one of the medical professionals a question around COVID. And, like, they basically just said that they're learning every day, and a lot of the time they just don't have answers. And it is the likes of me that is telling the story and telling people, like, these, this is the effect that it can have on you. And then other people have absolutely no reaction. They don't even know they have it.
And hair loss, Anne?
I actually, it's funny, my hair is the best it has ever been.
Thankfully,
but there has to be something good about it.
Hair gain, it sounds like. Don't talk about gain. Talk about pain. I know what you described is awful, and it's a really high level of discomfort and discomfiture as well. But what about pain?
To me, pain. I have an underlying condition. I suffer from chronic pain, but this now has obviously made it worse. So, like, 2 weeks ago, I was in Galway and I had to get a nerve block. So I got that into the base of my head and it lasted 3 days. So then it came back with a vengeance. So, like, the pain goes out through my feet. Like, even I was at a meeting yesterday and I, you know, crunched down on my knees to talk to one of my colleagues, and I actually had to ask him to stand up and lift me off the ground.
Wow.
You know, and those type of things are hard to ask people to do when you're not used to doing it, and you kind of, one, you don't want people to see that you're suffering or that you're, and I'd be the type that I'd kind of cover everything up anyway, but it is very difficult at this stage. But and I find it hard when you see people not taking it serious or not looking at the bigger picture.
Have you taken anything for the pain apart from over-the-counter medicines?
No, I have had I've had injections. For pain. I actually went through 3 Fridays on the trot that I had to get pain injections over the last month. Like, I was, you know, so it's constant. Like, the contact now with the neurologist and my GP are on a weekly basis now to try and just to function on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, let me bring Mark Bourke in. Mark was on before in a much relieved situation because you contracted coronavirus at the end of March, Mark, and you were in serious difficulties with a time frame even put on your life expectancy of 24 hours. How are you now, Mark?
Well, considering where I was 6 months ago, Joe, it's almost 6 months now, I'm doing quite well, you know. It was bad enough for me now when I was in hospital for nearly 4 weeks. But, I haven't got those taste issues that lady has. There are other people that I've heard have had them as well. I got my taste back fairly quickly. And nothing tasted off, or I don't have a metallic taste in my mouth.
Okay. So what are your symptoms? What are you displaying?
Tiredness.
Okay.
Exhaustion. An hour of anything, and I wouldn't even call it hard labour. You know, it bunches you completely.
But at the time, you were a miracle recovery.
I was, yeah. Well, there was a lot of things, but a couple of things went wrong with me. You know, the COVID was so bad that it was to begin with. And then I got a clot on top of that. So, you know, that didn't help matters. And as we spoke about before on your show, it was less than 24 hours to live, and you brought the family in. And then, you know, it went from 24 to 48 to 72. And 4 or 5 days later, the COVID started to leave, and they were able to get me off the machines and scan me, and things seemed to be on the up.
And when you say your energy levels are on the floor, how long are you on the flat of your back every day, or does that help?
Well, in the last month, so let's say for 5 months, I was very bad. particularly in the first 2 to 3 months, I would have been in bed an awful lot. I'm not back at work or anything yet. I've done a couple of hours, a couple of days, you know, over the last 6 weeks. But like, I go out, like I've been out doing general things now this morning, out for a few hours. I'm not back yet, and like I'm just walloped. Do you know what I mean? I've been doing a little bit of driving. I've been nothing like. The energy is the lack of energy and the tiredness. It hits you so quickly. Like I'm tired when I wake up in the morning. I'm tired in the middle of the day. I'm tired in the evening. I'm tired all the time. It's a hard one to get a grip on. You know, I don't understand it. And I think the medical people they're still learning. Like
they're learning from people like you. Hair loss, Mark, which we've heard as well.
Well, I've always had a problem with that.
Have you? Okay.
But nothing extra going missing at the moment. Thank God.
Okay. Did you ever have the taste issue?
Well, you see, because I was really out of it for 4 weeks or thereabouts, I don't have any much memory from 3 or 4 days before I went into hospital, and the only memory then is 3 or 4 days after I came out of ICU. But I did have my taste back when I came out of ICU. Do you know what I mean? Because when I was eating the hospital food and everything, it was like you tasted something for the first time. That's the only thing I would say to you. Everything was like a new taste. So it was as if your body and mind had forgotten what something tasted like.
Anne, finally, is there any food that you find repulsive now?
I would love the likes of a vegetable soup or a leek potato soup, whereas now I just, you know, I'd actually cook it and then I can't actually eat it. The idea of the smell and it going into my mouth, I just can't do it.
Hopefully that will lift now, Anne. God.
Yeah. Well, look, at the end of the day, it's great to be here. It's great to be alive. Yeah. And I know, unfortunately, you know, there is families out there that, you know, went through that side of it and it's very hard on them. But, you know, for me, it's great to be able to support and help people now through it. But, you know, I would hope that people, I know people are getting tired and they're getting frustrated with the whole thing, but I would hope that people do take it seriously and, you know, wear the masks, keep their hands clean. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're protecting yourself, but you're also protecting others. And nobody knows you get it, really, because I've no idea to this day how I picked it up. So it's so important that people are conscious of others around them. As I said, I have a 23-year-old daughter with cerebral palsy, and I can't afford for her to pick it up. And I've so many others, you know, that are friends with her, and I've a lot of people out there that have kids with disabilities. I don't want to see them suffer, and I would hope that people, you know, at the end of the day, it's first and foremost you look after yourself, and once you look after yourself, you're going to protect other people around you. So I would strongly ask people, even though they're frustrated and they might be sick of listening to the government, but at the end of the day, it's about your neighbours, your family, and people on the ground. You know, be conscious and be watchful of them, because I wouldn't wish COVID on my worst enemy.
Maybe the whole pubs debate. I know the drink only pubs will be open outside of Dublin from Monday, but like I'm seeing, we're in Dublin, we're told we're at level 2.5 or 2 and a little bit. But like, if we got to level 4, there'd be own households only, no visitors allowed into your house. No social family gatherings should take place in other settings. This is if we get to level 4. This is why we have to try and stop it. Up to 6 guests for a wedding ceremony and reception. That's if we get to level 4. Dublin's at level 2.5. No organised indoor gatherings should take place, full stop. Outdoor gatherings, 15 people max. And that's only level 4. When we get to no matches, football, gyms closed. That's if we get to level 4, which hopefully that's why everyone has to make the extra effort in the next few days. Okay, Anne, stay fighting. But it's the problem with coronavirus is half the time we don't know what we're fighting against. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
This is the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, in this. Well, you see, on the one hand, they're explaining why Dublin is that little bit different. But this, he's under, well, there's about four people in the Dáil, as far as I can see on the screen here, and I can't hear them, but I can see they're very, very, very animated. A number of Sinn Féin TDs are very animated. Richard Boyd Barrett is very animated, where Micheál Martin seems to be praying a lot to Our Lady Queen of Heaven, in that he's thrown his eyes up to heaven a lot. But this is what the Taoiseach was saying, trying to explain the difference between Dublin and the 25 counties.
It's not 2.5 and 2.5. NPHET gave us advice on Dublin, and we acted on that advice. We were in transition from the first model to this new model that's been created, this new plan. NPHET gave the advice prior to it being adopted by government during the week. The modification relates to wet pubs and the matches. That's it. No big deal here, in one sense. It is for the pubs. It's a very big deal for them, to be fair, and their livelihoods. But in terms of the broader overall plan, the issue is we got advice from NPHET. We didn't want to ignore it. The alternative was you move to level 3, if that's what the deputy is suggesting, without advice to this. But that's the advice. We didn't get advice from NPHET to move to level 3 on Thursday. But you want government to move to level 3. That's the implication, it seems to me. And therefore, we accepted NPHET's advice in respect of Dublin today. NPHET will meet again on Thursday, and NPHET could give other advices.
But the other difference between level 2 for the 25 counties and level 2 and a little bit for Dublin is level 2 for the 25 says visitors from one other household only are up to 6 visitors from 2 other households or 3 other households. So an older parent can have their 4 children in the house from 3 other households, 3 children in the house. But Dublin is visitors from one other household only. So an older person can only have one adult child in the house, so to speak, because obviously the 5 children, except in rare circumstances, would be the one. So that's another difference, as well as the drink-only pubs being kept closed in Dublin. Jennifer Higgins, back to this whole effects of COVID-19. You had it in March, Jennifer, and how did it affect you?
It affected me that I got this terrible virus. My body would go on fire. And I'm 79, so it's, I haven't got a lot of energy anyway. Mm-hmm. And then I started to get these panic attacks, I felt that the house was sucking me in, and I had to get out, and I didn't have the energy. You couldn't have anybody in, and you couldn't get out. I phoned the GP, and I waited the 14 days, and I wasn't getting any better.
Okay.
So he said that I needed to come down, and he eyeballed me, he took my oxygen level in my blood, which was okay. But I'm still getting panic attacks. I tune in to Dr. Harry Barry.
He's
very good. But, I mean, they're terrible. That I'm having panic attacks. I've got very little energy. And it's really, for the few years I've got left, it's really shortened my life. I feel that there's no... And the doctor did give me diazepam, but you don't want to keep taking them all the time. I mean, I'm a retired nurse, and I know that they're highly addictive, so you can't be relying on those all the time. But, I mean, I'm still not right.
Can you, Jennifer, describe the panic attacks in more detail?
First of all, you get this buzzing noise in your head.
Okay.
And then you get, you kind of get it like it's like a seizure. You think, I must get out. I used to look at patients dying in bed, and they kept trying to get out. And I thought, what are they getting out for? And it's that you're losing control.
Okay.
That you're not in control of your body or your mind. And that if you feel, however unrealistic it may sound, that if you get out, I've got out at 2:00 in the morning and gone across the road and sat on the wall.
Wow.
And I know that it's illogical, that it's stupid, but to me, I felt as if I went outside the door, that I was okay. And and another thing, and I said this to the doctor, if I went in the car and went for a drive, I'd feel safe, but I didn't feel safe in the house.
Wow. And did you get any other effects of COVID? Did you
You were on about people losing their hair.
Yeah.
My hairdresser said that the texture of my hair is completely different. I have a different head of hair.
In what way?
The texture of it. You know, the texture of my hair is different.
What, you've gone from silk to a Brillo pad? It's not Joe, funny. It's not funny.
Oh, Jesus. Give me a break, Joe.
Oh, you're brilliant. God, you're brilliant.
But give me a break.
Have you ever, Jennifer, had a panic attack before? People do get panic attacks.
No, not at all. I did my psychiatric training. I've dealt with people
with panic attacks.
But I've never had any. But it is. I mean, and you see, the thing is that it's the unknown. They don't know anything about it, do they?
Yeah, exactly. We're learning every day. But the number of experts that are on. What about taste, Jennifer? Taste.
I lost that to begin with.
Did you?
I did lose that to begin with. And you do get, you know, from time to time you do get a taste in your mouth. But it's not as bad as it was. I had no appetite, and I just wanted to sleep all the time.
And when you say you lost taste, if you put sugar on your tongue?
Well, I was gargling my mouth with salt and water, but you couldn't taste it. It was just like ordinary water.
Yeah.
But the main thing were the panic attacks. They're terrible.
Yeah. And that, you describe yourself walking out of the house, at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah. I've sat in the hall with the door open, right?
Good woman, yeah. That's fine.
And I had the door open, and then I had to go across the hall to get out.
And you walked
I walked across with the stick and sat on the wall. Anything could have happened to me. But
did anyone come out to you, Jennifer, and say...
No, there was no one saw me. So they'd have probably... The men in white coats probably been out to collect me.
No, they would. And so you're sitting there. How did you calm down enough to go back into your house at 3 o'clock in the morning?
I started to get cold.
Okay.
I have to move my car. What, 2 seconds?
Where's Jennifer gone? Why should she have to move her car? Okay. Jennifer, come back to me. She's gone out to sit in the wall, eh, Jennifer? She's tonic anyway. Stay. Are you back?
I am. Yeah. I had to move my car.
Where were you going? Where'd you go there?
He was washing my car and I had to move.
Okay.
But you went out,
you sat in the wall at 3 o'clock in the morning, nobody saw you, no buyer leave. And you after a while you got a little bit chilly and you went back in.
I went back in. But the door opened. I couldn't close the door.
Okay. Now is that claustrophobia?
Well, no, it isn't. But then I went in and thought, well, if I leave the door open, it's the fact that I felt that if I was locked in the house, and the fact that we were locked in as well, that had a terrible psychological effect on elderly people. That there was no one could come in. My brother rang every day, and I had a friend in Dublin who used to ring me. But the thing was, that wasn't, you know, they couldn't come and visit.
Wow. I don't want to know where you live in that sense. But I live
in the centre of the town. Well, on the edge of the town.
A town. It's not in Dublin. It's a city.
Kinsale.
No, Kinsale. Okay. Beautiful town. And your neighbours would be good. They'd knock in.
I had a neighbour up the road. She was excellent. But she couldn't come down because, you know, I didn't want to give her the virus.
And you know that buzzing noise you said you got when you got COVID?
Yeah.
Was that tinnitus?
It was like that.
Was it? Yeah.
It was like that. And then when the panic attack would subside, right, that would go away.
Because tinnitus drives people mad, you know that, I know.
It does. But the beginning of the panic attack would be a noise in my head and I think, oh my God, it's coming on me.
Okay. And how are you now, Jennifer?
I'm not so bad now. I went down to the spa in Sudani and I had a swim.
And the
doctor said, just keep
good
going
woman.
Out. But I have to get, you know, you have to motivate yourself.
Yeah,
you
brilliant.
Can't just... Some days I don't have the energy to do anything.
Yeah.
And the day that I'd have a bit of energy, I'd try and get out and do something.
And were you hospitalised with the COVID?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, stay there, Jennifer. I want you to listen to, and if you want, you can talk to Noel Donlan, who's in hospital at the moment with COVID. Noel, how are you and where are you and what's happened?
Hi, Joe.
How are you doing?
Good. I'm here in Limerick for COVID in the hospital.
How long have you been in, Noel?
Thursday.
And when did you get your symptoms first?
Last Monday night, Joe. Started at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop shaking in bed with the cold.
Right.
And after about 45 minutes, I said to my wife, we'll take our oldest boy out of his bed and I'll go into his.
Yeah.
And so I went in and I slept. Yeah. And the next morning I woke up and the bed was drowned in sweat. And it continued like that, Joe. I rang my GP at 9 o'clock on the Tuesday morning. And he said, assume you've COVID, he said.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get you a test.
Yeah.
So if you told me that Tuesday, Joe, to drive to get a test, I wouldn't have been able to. I was that weak.
Okay.
And the pains and aches kicked in then. And I got a very, very little sleep that night. And I woke up Wednesday morning at 6:30 and I had a shower. And I drove in then to get my test. And I was back in bed at 8 o'clock that morning. And I went downhill rapid after that. And just the pains and aches and the colds and the chills just started. My doctor, my GP had given me, my wife picked up a prescription and I was taking paracetamol and I was drinking loads of water.
Yeah.
I'm a fit man, Joe, like, you know, I'm 6'2", athletic. I've never been sick like this before in my life.
And what age are you now?
45.
And how did you get to hospital then?
So that was the terrible Wednesday. Then the Wednesday night continued, and I didn't get hardly any sleep. Wednesday night, 4:30 on Thursday morning, I got this unmerciful pain in my back. I thought my two kidneys were going to jump out of my back. And at 6 o'clock, I called my wife and I said, ring an ambulance. And so she helped me pack my bag. And I could hardly walk into the toilet, Joe.
Yeah. So the ambulance arrived.
Yeah. So I couldn't say goodbye to my young boys. I couldn't say goodbye to my wife.
And you have two very young children, 3 and 4, isn't that correct? Very young.
Yeah.
And do you remember getting into the ambulance and arriving in hospital and what was going through your head? Obviously, you were in great distress.
Well, it was. Think about it, Joe. The reason I called the ambulance was the pain in my back. I was breathing fine.
Yeah.
My lungs were fine. And I was delighted to see the ambulance. I was never in an ambulance in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the lads are great, you know.
Yeah.
The paramedic hit it up in his PPE. And he put me down the stretcher and he just asked me questions the whole way into town. And then I got wheeled into the COVID section in A&E in Limerick. And I was put up on the trolley then. And they x-rayed my chest. Took my blood, urine.
Yeah.
And I think it was 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock that afternoon, the HSE rang and said it was positive.
And how were you feeling at that stage?
I was rock bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Because what happened then was they were going to admit me. And they were pushing me up in a wheelchair. I was never in a wheelchair in my life.
Mm.
And that was the worst part, Joe. You don't know what you're going up to, and will you come out? And
well, that went through your head, did it?
Absolutely.
That you wouldn't come out.
Well, you don't know what's happening. Like
yeah.
when you've been fit all your life,
yeah.
And you got this, you know,
yeah.
And you don't know what you got. But then they tell you you've COVID, and then you see, you know, in the pictures on the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and you want people to know
that it's real.
Yeah, and it's serious.
It's very serious, Joe. Like I was, I was away working in London for 7 weeks, and I came home. Mm. And I was, well, what I thought, I was been very cautious. Right. I used to change my mask constantly. I'd never wear the same mask twice. Okay. Never. If I was taking a trip somewhere, I always had a couple of masks. I had a dirty bag for a mask that was used. I always washed my hands, and I still got it. I don't know how I got it.
And do you think you got it in London?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And what were you doing in London? What do you, can you, what's your trade?
I work as a decorative artist. I do, like, kind of high-end decoration on interiors.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Highly skilled.
Yeah, I've an Italian business partner. Unfortunately, he's test positive as well in Italy. But he's okay. He's just weak. He doesn't have the same symptoms as me, which is very strange.
Well, people seem to be showing different symptoms.
Yeah.
And Noel, how are you? Are you in a room on your own there now? Where are you now?
Completely isolated.
Yeah. And who can you see? Or
nobody. I'm looking out here now, and I have a nice, fine, big window. Thank God.
Yeah, great.
And you know, the nurses and all the staff here are normally straight to heaven, Joe. You know yourself.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But I'm kind of not allowed outside the room. I'm, for the first day yesterday, I got out of bed after 6 days. And I'm walking up and down the room now just to kind of stretch the muscles, you know. So on top of that, then, the doctor told me I got pneumonia. Thanks to COVID, huh? So I'm not the worst, Joe, you know, by far. There's people that are coming into hospital who can't breathe at all. And if I can just deliver a message to people, do not take any chances. Do not take this virus lightly.
Yeah.
At all. You know, assume that you have it or assume that everyone else has it. Please wash your hands and wear a mask. Don't take any chances. You know, you don't want to be here. You know, the staff are busy enough. They don't need to see anybody coming in. And you don't want to be in here either.
Yeah.
You know, think of your families.
Are you over the worst of it now?
I think I am now, Joe, yeah.
Oh, good man, God. Well done to everybody, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks, all. And lucky enough, my wife got tested with my two boys, and they're negative at the moment.
Great.
So they have to get tested again on Saturday.
Has anyone mentioned about going home, or is it too early?
The doctor said I could be here for another week, but that it could change day by day. The infection in my blood is going down.
God.
And they just have to get my lung capacity up, because then the virus went into my lungs a little. That's why the pneumonia came. So I've been treated for that now as well.
Okay.
You know, normally I have a stronger voice than this, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, but
appetite.
Yeah, I had my first proper meal on the Friday.
Great.
I looked for about 4 days, so I'm eating.
God.
And drinking, and they took me off the drip, and God. I'm on full meds now, like steroids and antibiotics and all that, you know. But it's real. It's definitely real. Like, I've sent out a message to a lot of people. Wow. I decided to send a message to kind of shock people, and it's because nobody knows anybody with COVID. That's the problem. You know, it's so sparse around the country. But when you know somebody who has it, that's what puts the frighteners up at people.
Yeah.
You know? And I know we keep seeing it on the news every day, you know? And people get complacent. But there's a reason they're telling us. There's a reason why they're trying to keep us safe. Because it's not a nice thing to get, you know.
And Noel, when you and people, I know people are very good, and people are doing their best, including publicans and their family. But when you hear the argument, say, about pub or drinking only pubs, do you kind of, how do you throw your eyes up to heaven, or you say, I don't know, it's probably wrong for me even to counterpose something like that, but you've definitely put things in perspective, Noel.
Yeah, well, Joe, I live in the countryside, and I moved out there 5 years ago. And I found the loveliest little pub you could imagine.
Yeah.
It's like it had been in your own little sitting room, like.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how I integrated into the countryside. So not for the pints, but...
Yeah, for the community. I know them. They're brilliant.
Yeah. Going down to watch the Munster match or the rugby match, and I was embraced there, you know. But it's a small place, Joe. And how, if that place was to open and social distance comfortably, how many people would be able to fit in the lounge? I don't know, would you be able to fit 8?
Yeah.
How can you run a business like that? You know, so I think, you know, that the government should try and help the publicans as much as they can, but like priority of alcohol over health is not, you know.
It's not an argument.
It's not an argument at all, Joe, you know.
Okay. And have you radio there, though? How do you have you an iPad or your smartphone or?
Yeah, I sure have all the gadgets. You
good
know,
man,
yourself.
good man. Cool. And are you able to get out a pen and paper to scribble at this stage, or is it?
Yeah, I've kind of dipping away here now the last couple of days now, doing a few bits.
Okay.
Finally started to read a book. I've been trying to read a book for 5 years now.
What's the book, can I ask?
Yeah, it's called, an old school friend gave it to me. It's called The Ways of Seeing by John Berger.
Oh, yeah, that's a sociologist, a long time. Well, it's a long time on the go.
Yeah.
Well, you've good ways of seeing in every sense of the word, Noel, and long may you continue. Hair loss, no. Taste, no.
Never lost my smell or my taste.
Oh, okay.
My lungs were fine
when
I was there, and it was only until I got to the hospital that to realize the infection went in. That was it. So everyone's systems are different.
Okay. Noel, if you can stay listening, because after the break I'll be talking to someone else who's been inspired by your call, but he's going to tell us what he went through. And he was on a life support machine. Hopefully by this day next week, Nollaghy will be back home and with your two lovely boys and your partner. So fingers crossed now. As you say, you're in good hands. Where are you? Limerick University Hospital?
Top hospital, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Noel, thanks indeed for taking the time to contact us and spread the word. That's Noel Donald, decorative artist. And as you say, COVID sufferer currently ringing from us. Hospital bed. 51551, wash your hands.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. You just heard from Noel Donlan, who's in hospital in Limerick with COVID. Alan, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, well, you sound, your voice is in great fettle. When did you contract COVID?
I wish the body. I'll start off, and I really don't want to go into too much detail.
Okay.
But I was retired from the government. I was asked to go back into a frontline area in March. I was back in work probably for about 4 weeks, and I was sort of brought to a hospital, and they became very concerned about me. I was admitted, and I spent about 12 weeks in hospital. As a general rule, never been in hospital in my life, never sick.
Yeah.
And this is why I want to warn people how dangerous this is. Everything started basically to go downhill once they diagnosed that I had COVID, and they diagnosed it fairly rapidly through a CT scan. I ended up over the whole system anyway, over the 12 weeks in ICU on a ventilator, dialysis machines, blood transfusions, you name it, I got it. I'm still, let me put it this way, it feels like a truck run over you, and then when you get up, he runs over you from the other side.
Wow.
But the hospital have been absolutely fantastic.
And what were your initial symptoms, Alan?
I sort of lethargic and temperatures. But I think one of the key things is once the temperatures start going up very high, well, then there is a big problem there. My breathing, as per se, I found it very, very difficult to accept a tight face mask. Now, they overcame that. They brought in a new type of machine that seemingly they'd been using in Italy, and that was successful. They have loads of them in the country now where the heat, the oxygen makes it much easier. But then it gets to the stage where it's just too difficult to breathe, and that's when they'd put you on life support. Now, I'm technical enough, but they had me on FaceTime and everything when I was about to go. It's very disturbing.
What do you
for
mean? What do you
your
mean?
Family. Let's
what do you mean,
down.
Alan? They had you on FaceTime.
Oh, on FaceTime, yeah. Well, like there were. My wife was there, but the children and that were on. That was going to be the end of it that night, possibly.
And could you talk?
No.
Could they? Could you?
I could sort of talk, but I was on planet Zol, if you know what I mean.
And could you hear them, your children?
Not really, no.
Okay.
But now, as I said, I want to give praise to the hospital, if I can.
Of course you can. Yeah.
Is Tala Hospital.
Yeah, great hospital, yeah.
They sometimes get, bad comments or
it's a busy,
bad
it's
things.
A busy place, yeah.
They were absolutely brilliant. And as I was told, had they been as busy as they expected at that time to be, I was finished. They just would not have had the resources to cope if they became overrun, like happened in Spain, happened in Italy and that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still attending them. I had problems with my kidneys. They've done an awful lot. And I have to say, I do feel okay. But sometimes it's still a bit fuzzy, it's still a bit hazy. But I wouldn't recommend anybody to have to suffer. When I say suffer, it's more emotional to your family and to relatives, and especially at the time where people can't visit and things like that.
And did you know when your children were FaceTiming you, because you were the one that was in the prone position in bed, did you know... You said what was
no,
it?
No, I that period is very abstract to me, per se, but I was told exactly what happened, that it was all set up, that I wasn't expected to make it, you know.
Okay, and you did make it, which is
great. Oh, I did, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Okay. Do you want to say hello to Noel in hospital in Limerick and say a few words to him, Alan?
I do, and there's one thing that I just, to Noel maybe as well.
Oh, yeah.
I left Tala a bit early. They wanted to keep me for another 2 or 3 weeks, but at that stage, I sort of said, look, I've got over this in my own mind. But even the staff who I know from other areas in the health service who have contacted it find it next to impossible. The stairs in their house is like Kilimanjaro. And even months later, I can't fly up and down the stairs here. I should have lived in a bungalow, Joe, you know.
Okay, but Alan, you were saying to Noel, stay in as long as you have
stay
to.
Stay in as long as you can.
Okay.
I'm happy to stay here. Very happy to stay here. I'm in no hurry.
Yeah. And, Joe, it's just to people...
And what age group are you, Alan?
I'm 62, Joe.
And Noel is 17 years younger than you.
Yeah, and I'm sprightly, now.
Well done, yeah.
But I just want to warn people. I've seen young people in there in a terrible state, and they wouldn't have had the experience that myself or Noel would from longevity.
Yeah.
And I can tell you it's a very, very distressing... Okay. thing to and for people to say, like people have said, it's only a little flu.
It is not a little flu.
No.
Okay, well, Alan, yourself and Noel there are arm in arm, so to speak, across the airwaves, pushing forward and saying to people, please take this seriously, take it very, very seriously. Both of you, full recovery, PG, ASAP, Alan and Noel Donald, 51551, Watcher.
Yo, Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Eddie, you can produce. Ray Darcy is next.